This is Dr. Hudson, and today we have the pleasure of speaking with Kirsten Perry. And Kirsten Perry is the 2018 School Counselor of the Year. So welcome, Ms. Perry. It is so great to talk to you today.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Okay, well, let's just start with you giving us a little bit of a background about yourself.
Sure. So I've been a school counselor for 7 years. I've spent most of my time, or actually all of my time, working in with pre-K through 8th grade students. More recently, though, I have transitioned into the district office for the Chicago Public Schools. And so now I am a K-12 school counseling specialist, which means that I basically provide training on the American School Counselor Association model to school counselors throughout the city of Chicago.
Awesome. That is wonderful. Okay. So let's jump right into some questions and answer. Why is it that you decided that you wanted to become a school counselor?
Sure. So for me, it's more of a personal story. So I never know a better way to say it, but to say that I was, a delinquent child. I fell off track at a very young age. I was in the 7th and 8th grade when I started to use alcohol and marijuana, and I'm very thankful that I never got into any other type of drugs. But then that led to, as you could imagine, you know, substance abuse usually doesn't lead to anything good. So
right.
Led to me, getting involved in other things that were not healthy and making decisions that weren't the best and not always safe. And I ended up, I did graduate high school, but I had to go to summer school in order to complete high school. And I don't feel like, when I look back at it, I really don't think that I should have graduated. I think that I just kind of got pushed through. And then from there, I had no real intention of going to school, or I didn't have a real vision for myself. And I ended up getting pregnant at the age of 18. And that was definitely a turning point for me in my life, where I started to make changes. And I started, you know, changing the people that I hung out with and changing, you know, making better decisions for myself after having my son.
Mm-hmm.
So then later I did go to college. I got my undergrad, and it was in the history of world religion, which I always laugh about, because what are you going to do with a degree like that, which is basically nothing. That was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so there I was then in my late 20s, and I didn't, you know, I wasn't making enough money to really get by, and, you know, I was a single mom. Mm-hmm. My son's father was actually involved in a gang,
mm-hmm.
and he was in and out of jail throughout my son's life, so I was raising my son by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So there I was in my late 20s, and I really felt like, you know, I wasn't doing what I wanted to do with my life and becoming the person that I wanted to be. So I really sat and thought long and hard, and I thought to myself, you know, I'm going to move forward, but when I move forward, I'm going to do something that really has meaning for me, and I want to make my life what I want it to be.
Mm.
And so I decided to go back to school, and I chose school counseling. And really my reason was that I wanted to help youth like myself, or even like my son's father, to make better decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So that they could have a better future, and for some students who maybe have, you know, barriers in place, because I do feel in some ways, you know, I'm lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had opportunities that I see some other people don't have. And so, you know, I felt like I wanted to do something about that and create, you know, and I guess help kids. So that was my reason for getting into school counseling.
Awesome. That is a very powerful story. You took a situation that it could have gone either way, but you found the grit to turn it around and make sure that you made something positive and meaningful out of what was going on.
Yeah. And I have to say, okay, even now, you just do what you do, and I'm not doing it, for any kind of personal recognition.
Right.
I'm just doing what I do, but it is, now being in this situation, and I've had the opportunity to meet the former First Lady of the United States,
yes,
Michelle Obama. You do kind of look back like, okay, I guess that's pretty cool.
Yes, yes. Had this amazing story and how you got into school counseling and once you got into it and doing some reflection, what do you think are some of the misconceptions about being a school counselor are?
I think that's a really good question, and it's funny in a way because when I started my program, I think I had those same misconceptions myself. I think the misconception is that school counselors mostly only deal with mental health, that they, work more individually and small groups. They're sitting in their office with a cup of coffee or whatever people think that they're doing. But what was interesting, and I had those same misconceptions as I think a lot of people do, but when I got into my graduate school program, I learned about the ASCA national model and learned that school counseling is so much more than just that.
Yes.
It's really thinking preventatively and doing things that can impact the whole school and working in three domains, not just the mental health, social and emotional domain, but also in academic and college and career.
Yeah, both of my parents are retired teachers, and that was always the running joke. They're like, oh, school counselors, you just sit in your office with your cup of coffee and wait for kids to come in crying. Right. And, it was a joke, 99% of it. But, as I got into it and over the years, and it is something that I also feel very passionate about. There were a lot of kind of aha moments of really, or you guys deal with that, in me talking about the different things that I did, throughout each school year. So let's talk a little bit more about that. What is it that you feel a school counselor really does in a school?
I actually heard a principal say this, that school counselors are the glue that binds different components of the school together. And I do kind of think that's true in a way. So, so with that being said, I mean, school counselors are collaborators. So,
yes.
So we're collaborating with the principal. We're collaborating with teachers, with parents, with students, with people in the larger community. So in that way, I feel like we are kind of the glue.
Mm-hmm.
And then, there's all those other, I guess, pillars to school counseling. So we're advocates.
Yes.
And so I feel that sometimes, teachers can be focused on their portion and principals even can be focused on what they have to do. But school counselors can look at the whole overview of the school and identify gaps for students and things that maybe other people in the school might not see. And I think in that way we're advocates.
Yes.
And also leaders, and we're those that can create systemic change in schools by doing those things, by collaborating, by advocating for students and leading different initiatives in the school that can create change.
Absolutely. It's such a powerful position to be in. It's also a position where if you're not careful, or if you let all of the things that we do have to do and all the hats that we have to wear, it would be really easy to just kind of get absorbed in it and not do anything. So it's important to always keep, or I feel that it's always important to keep in the forefront of our minds that this is a really important role. And you hit on something so important, that we can see the bigger picture a lot of times, and we can affect the direction that things are going for students, and affect, you know, bring about positive change, because we can see all the pieces of the puzzle and try, you know, very hard to get those pieces in the right places to help that child be successful.
That's right. And I think a lot of times school counselors struggle with seeing themselves as leaders.
Mm-hmm.
But really, truly, we are.
Yes.
And just like you said, I mean, if we see a need, we can advocate for that change to happen in the school. And so I'm just thinking of an example. When I started working at one of the schools I worked at, there was no social emotional learning happening in the school at all. None. And I worked in a very high crime area in Chicago, where there was a lot of trauma. And there was no social emotional learning happening. And so what I did is I talked to the principal and said, you know, our students need this. And fortunately, he agreed with me, and he saw that this is something we need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to advocate to get a curriculum and develop partnerships, and we started putting systems in place to support students' social emotional needs. So that's an example of how a school counselor can be a leader and create programs that would be implemented throughout the school.
Absolutely. Yes, and talking about that, and you've done a lot of your school counseling in middle schools. What unique role do you think middle school counselors play in supporting students' college readiness?
So we do a lot of studies in Chicago public schools about that transition. And it's really interesting, I think, that middle school is such a critical time for students, but it's often an overlooked time.
Mm-hmm.
But really, middle school is so important because, you know, looking at data, kids tend to, you know, their GPA tends to fall when they get into high school.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've learned through studies is that it's because students aren't always prepared for that change as they go to high school. They're not always prepared for the environmental changes. They're not always prepared for things like understanding what a GPA is. And it's really important as middle school counselors that we start to prepare students for all of those changes. So students should understand what a GPA is before they get into high school, because every year that you're in high school, your GPA matters towards getting ready for, you know, whatever you're going to do after high school.
Right.
You know, just there's a lot more independence in high school, so helping students really start to, you know, develop those independent functioning skills before they go into high school, so that they know how to manage their workloads and their schedules and get around and keep track of their own work, because, you know, they don't always have that same structure that they would have in a middle school and high school.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think the social-emotional needs change a little as you get into high school. And,
yes,
you know, it might be different for you all there. Because I don't know how your school structure is there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, in Chicago anyway, you know, a lot of times the you know, you have a bigger school, a larger school environment, and you're not always getting that same level of social-emotional support that you could get in a smaller school setting.
Right.
but the dynamics change, and you have you know, more peer pressure, and
yes.
And you know, and so, you know, helping students understand how to advocate for themselves, and how to you know, be prepared for those types of peer pressure situations, or you know, and how they can build their self-esteem and be ready for those kind of challenges as they go into high school as well.
Absolutely.
And then I would say, like, a final component that I sometimes think is overlooked is parents. And parents, you know, really need to be part of that conversation throughout a child's education. And parents sometimes can tend to become less involved as children get older.
Yes.
You know, they tend to be there every day bringing their kid to school when they're younger, and then as they get older, but really finding ways to keep parents engaged and involved in, you know, a child's education is so important.
Yes. Do you have any tips or things that you did that you found successful with having or bringing about that parent interaction in the school and with their children?
Yeah, it was very challenging for me. So, like I said, the last school I worked at, you know, I worked in a very high crime, low socioeconomic status area of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it was very difficult to get parents in the school and very difficult to get them involved. So some things that I would do were, you know, kind of a little creative,
mm-hmm.
but I would do something that the parents would want. And sometimes, you know, it'd be something like a bingo night or
right.
a basketball game or whatever. And I would try to get parents into the school that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then while they were there, then I might, you know, also include, you know, before we start bingo, we're going to talk about this, this, and this.
Ah, yes.
With your child's education. And so that would be a way that we would get parents into the school. And then also, you know, doing those, you know, we might look at the kids who are struggling, and we would intentionally reach out to those parents by phone. And sometimes, you know, getting that personal phone call
mm-hmm.
Can make a difference. But never, and I never would ever approach a parent that they're doing something wrong. Because I always, and I really truly believe this, I think every parent wants the best for their child.
Right.
And sometimes they just need to understand, you know, the need
mm-hmm.
In order for them to be able to help their child. So I would never approach a parent in any kind of negative way. It would always be positive and ensuring that, you know, and knowing, and I do really believe this, that every parent wants the best for their child. You just have to help them understand why it's important, or
right.
you know,
and
you know why their involvement is important, and then I would see things start to improve.
Yes, and I think a lot of times that's a very important point, in that, you know, we work with military children and from all walks of life and all ranks and that type of thing, and we just have to remember, like you said, that parents are doing the best they can, and they
yeah.
want the best for their students, and sometimes they don't know another way. Maybe it was just
right.
the way they were raised and it worked, so
exactly.
that's what I'm going to do.
Exactly.
So it is very important to just say, I'm, you know, kind of giving you some more tools for your bag, and these
exactly.
are things that I observed, and those types of statements when dealing with parents.
Mm-hmm.
Very true. I know before coming to Dodea, one of the places I worked was a school that was for students with mental and behavioral challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And the socioeconomic was very low. A lot of the parents hadn't finished high school. And one thing that we did one year was we taught the children like etiquette, like table etiquette and being out in public. And so we all pulled together. It was actually awesome. And we had the aides there were awesome cooks. And so they made like a spaghetti dinner. And then we decorated the the cafeteria and made it look like a restaurant. And so mm-hmm. we were offering a free meal to come in. Mm-hmm. But before we went into the quote unquote restaurant, like we took them to the classrooms and for some of them, this was like near the end of the year. It was the first time that they had been in the school.
Yeah.
So we were able to take that time to talk with them, and they got to know the teachers and see some of their students' work. And the kids were so excited to be able to share those things with them and then show them that they knew, you know, the different forks and when to do this and how to put the napkins on. And they were glowing. It was almost like they were afraid to come in before. Like it was like something, you know, like a...
Yeah.
Sometimes they see teachers and school counselors as, you know, the experts in that area, and they feel a little intimidated. So it was the first time they had been in, and it was like a positive experience for them. So that was great. So, yeah, sometimes we do have to get a little creative about how we get them in there.
Yeah. That's great.
Yes. Actually done when you were at Lawndale, you did quite a bit of work for improving student achievement. We were talking about, you know, doing what's right for students, and one of our domains is academic. What were some of the things that you did to improve student achievement?
So one of the major areas, and I would struggle with, you know, which category to put student attendance in, but one area that I worked a lot in, and I put it in achievement and academic, is attendance.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a very low attendance at the school, and so I did a lot of tiered interventions to address that area of need. So when I say tiered, I did, I would follow the MTSS, the multi-tiered systems of support model.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would create interventions that targeted the whole school. So that might be, you know, teaching a lesson about attendance to all the kids in the school, doing parent workshops so that parents knew about attendance in the school. And then I, you know, created systems for phone calls, daily phone calls to students that were absent every day. And then, you know, going down to the tier two, which is more like small groups,
mm-hmm.
I created a system called check-in and check-out. So I would, all the kids who are chronically absent, I would partner them with someone in the school that would check in on them every day. And if they weren't there, they would, you know, come and see them the next day and ask them, where were you or what happened?
Mm-hmm.
And just creating those personal connections so that it wasn't just the teachers, but also people outside of the classroom that also were showing care and concern for students.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the more individual level, it might be like creating parent contracts and that type of thing, or home visit sometimes if we needed to do that, or if there was something serious going on, you know, referral to an outside agency for some more intensive support.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did that, and we saw over 3 years there was about a 60% decrease in chronic absenteeism.
Wow.
And our overall attendance improved.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, going into achievement, I think, you know, if you're not there every day, you're not learning.
Right.
And so then that then impacted, you know, student grades,
mm-hmm.
because the students were there more frequently, which caused the grades to also go up. And then, the grades go up, the test scores go up.
Mm-hmm.
So that was, I would say that was my major area that I worked in. And I guess you could say this kind of goes into I already talked about parents. I think getting parents on board to mm-hmm. support academic achievement is so important. And so, you know, I would make sure that I touched on every single parent throughout the year. I at least had contact with every parent at least once or twice you know, just so that making sure that they have the information and they understand the importance of their child's education, and then doing things like workshops for parents of students that are failing classes, and how to support them, and that kind of thing. And then, and like I guess you could say it's more in the college and career domain. I feel like there's a fine line between the three domains in school counseling, because they all kind of support each other.
Yes.
But, you know, the career domain, you know, I would do a lot with, you know, exposure and having students exposed to different professionals, the students who went to college, you know, having career fairs, visiting high schools, visiting colleges, and really helping them to think about what they want to do in their future. But I feel like when you have those external motivations, I feel like it also impacts academic achievement, because it inspires you and it makes you want to work harder.
Yes.
And you see the purpose in education.
Absolutely. We're talking about the academics. We're talking about the social-emotional needs. How, in your opinion, how do you balance addressing the students' academic and the social-emotional needs, you know, with all of the other quote-unquote as duties as assigned? How do you see balancing all of those things?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's an art. I think I was reading in a book recently about school counseling that it's both a science and an art. And I think that's where the art comes in. You got to be kind of creative and thinking, you know, how you're going to, you know, create your schedules and your calendar. But I think, you know, I usually start there. I mean, I create a calendar because you really have to make sure you have that management system component. So how are you going to manage all of these things, and how are you going to deliver all of these services? So really creating a calendar, and I would create my calendar in the beginning of the school year before it even started. But of course, you know, things happen, and it's not like you're, it's not like set in stone and you can't change it.
No, it gives you a framework.
It gives me a framework to work in. And another thing that I did, which, you know, we have a lot of, I guess one benefit of being in a large city is that there's a lot of community resources or, you know, community organizations nearby. And so one thing that I did is I really tapped into those community resources and found ways to collaborate. So, you know, sometimes, like, you know, a parent workshop, for example, so I might not be the one facilitating it. I would be there, and I would be the one who set it up, but I might bring in some external person to come and actually facilitate the workshop. And I know, from what I understand, with you guys, I mean, I feel like you have a lot of resources you could tap into as well. But, you know, really kind of taking advantage of those resources. And another thing, you know, which I said earlier is collaboration. So I think sometimes school counselors feel like they have to do it all alone.
Right.
And really you really should never be doing anything alone. And so that's, I think, another important management system to have in place is, you know, creating collaborative teams. So, you know, like when I talked about my attendance intervention or even my social emotional systems that I built within the school, I had teams behind that.
Right.
You know, it wasn't me doing it by myself. And really, you should never be doing it by yourself, because you're not going to create systemic change in a school doing it alone.
Yes. And in talking about the collaboration and tapping into community resources, how did you go about establishing those community partnerships with your school?
Sure. So really, you know, I did like internet research to find out who might be around, and I just called. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, a lot of times people actually are looking for opportunities to work with students.
Yes.
So most of the time, I'd say most places I've called, people have been willing to collaborate. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's for free.
Yes.
And sometimes, I would maybe even be just driving down the street and drive past the place and think, what is that? And then go again to the internet and research it and find out, oh, this is a really great place that maybe my students want to go to. And, some places might be a place that offer free tutoring, or they offer mentoring services or mm-hmm. mental health services. And so by tapping into those resources, I was actually at my school, I created about 8 community partnerships.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to get a social worker at a very low cost. I was able to get a social worker at my school 3 days a week.
Wow.
I was able to get a counselor, like a therapist, mm-hmm. At my school 1 day a week, and that was for free.
Mm.
I got mentoring programs. I have like 2 different mentoring programs in the school, and then some just that were there to support different kinds of needs.
Mm-hmm.
And so then, by bringing in these partners that actually will come into my school and work with my students, I created a team, and right. I had all these people I could collaborate with, because I was the only counselor at my school. So, I would, that by creating these partnerships, again, I wasn't feeling isolated.
Right. Right. And like, I'm, yeah, mm-hmm. and I'm thinking about like, on the high school level, I always had a financial aid night, but
yeah.
I think maybe once or twice I was the actual speaker, but most times I wasn't. We have an educational
yeah.
center, on each base, and there was always like a representative from the college, from the colleges or universities that, were on our bases that were, they were willing to come out and talk about financial aid. And, we have a very specific audience, and they could talk about like the GI Bill and all those types of things. And they were more than willing to do it. They weren't even like pushing their college or
yeah.
university, but they, like you said, they were looking for ways to reach the community and partner. So,
Yeah,
we have to get a little creative sometimes, or even this wonderful conversation came about just like you said, from me, going on the internet and just giving it a try. You could have said no, but we're so grateful that you said yes, and we were able to have this conversation. So mm-hmm. it is
yeah,
important.
I think sometimes school counselors feel like they have to know everything about certain topics, and sometimes, it's just a matter of collaboration and reaching out, and you could find those experts to come and speak. And that's just as much within the school modeling, the school counseling framework, as doing it ourselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Talking about this, and I can tell the love you have for the profession, and I most certainly do as well. When we're looking at brand new counselors, brand new school counselors coming in, what advice would you give to a first or second year school counselor?
Yeah. So I would say, the first advice I would give is not to expect to know everything. And I think sometimes we feel, especially when we're starting out, that, we need to know everything and people are looking at us to know everything, but really looking at it as you're still learning. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think you never stop learning and you never stop
right.
being a student. And there's even, so much that I need to know that I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I guess, forgiving yourself for not always knowing everything, but looking at yourself as still being a student.
Mm-hmm.
My next bit of advice is really to make sure to form a relationship with the administrator in the school, and that's always worked for me. I've done that in every school that I've worked in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, it's so critical to have that relationship, and that when you're designing your school counseling program, that you're not doing it without the administrator's involvement
mm-hmm.
in designing the program, because if you do it on your own and it's not aligned with what the principal's doing, you're not always going to get that administrative backing that you need.
Right.
But if the administrator or principal, you know, understands what you're doing and feels that what you're doing is fully invested in what they're trying to do, if that makes sense, then you know, it propels your program forward mm-hmm. a lot quicker.
Definitely.
So I think the administrative relationships are so important. And also, making sure to provide opportunities for parents and students to have a voice in your program as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because really it's all about them. And so asking, I know I created a student council at my school, and I think that my program wouldn't have been as good as I was able to make it without them, because ultimately it's about the students. And so making sure that, you know, they're included in the development of the school counseling program, because it needs to be appealing to them.
Yes.
and what they want and what they need, and also parents.
Mm-hmm.
And so really, yeah, I, you know, really in the ASCA model, that would be like an advisory council,
mm-hmm.
But really making sure that you get feedback from other people in your program, and it's not just something you're creating on your own.
Absolutely. And we do have, or each year, school counselors provide their comprehensive school counseling program. And like you said, with ASCA, it's the advisory council.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a very important piece. Like you said, we need to know that we're meeting the needs and many of the wants as we can of our stakeholders, which are our students and our parents and admin in our community. So it's definitely an important piece. And in talking about components of our programs, how important do you feel data collection or keeping track in some manner of the different things that we do? How important do you feel that is, just in general and in being able to keep our programs about school counseling and not be overwhelmed with the other duties as assigned?
Yeah. So, I mean, I do think that does go back to that, you know, annual agreement with the principal and how you're using your time.
Mm-hmm.
And principals definitely, you know, you got to speak their language sometimes. And mm-hmm. a lot of principals, you know, or administrators, they're being held accountable to the data points.
Mm-hmm.
And so really making sure that we're looking at our school data, we're looking for those equity gaps, and we're creating our programs around that, and then, you know, monitoring if it's successful or not successful. But really, you know, again, working with administrators. Am I answering your question?
Yes, just the importance of data and
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and then I do think that, you know, when you have that administrative buy-in, you know, really looking at how you're spending your time, because school counselors easily can get other duties dumped on them.
Right.
But if a principal and even teachers, too, understand what you're doing and how it fits into the bigger puzzle, they're going to make sure that you are not interrupted.
Right.
And that you're able to do what you set out to do. But it really comes from them initially understanding what exactly you're working on. And it does, you know, for an administrator, you know, definitely looking at data, and for them to understand how you're working towards closing those gaps, they're gonna make sure that you're left alone to do that job.
Absolutely. Yes. And I think sometimes building that understanding and a culture of of appreciation and knowing what a school counselor does or our role, that takes time. That
it does.
And I've had to have situations where I'm like, okay, if I do this, then that means that I'm going to take away from this. And not in a disrespectful way, but just kind of putting it out there because they don't always understand. And a lot of times it is like, I don't know what else to do with this. Let's give it to the school counselor.
So
explaining, you know, if I do this,
miscellaneous
task. Right. So explaining, if I do this, that means that I won't be able to do my classroom guidance, you know, at that time, or I won't be, you know, just putting it out there. Cause I think, you know, I've said in several of these that we have school counselors just do, like, we know things are need to be done. So it's like, how can I help? And we just keep doing. Sometimes we forget to be self-advocates, you know, for ourselves and for our programs because we're just trying to make sure that every need is met. So we have to be cognizant of that.
Yeah, and it is that is one part of being a school counselor that's interesting because you would think that everyone in education would who works in a school building would know what a school counselor does. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that they don't.
Right.
So, you know, if somebody's been, you know, teaching or been an administrator for 20-something years, you know, the school counseling model has significantly changed over the years.
Yes.
So how could they know?
Right.
So we just have to educate. And that's why I really think, like, program reflection is really important, too,
yes.
You know, at the end of the school year to really reflect on, you know, how you spent your time, what did you do, what data impact did you have, what implications are there for that, and then sharing those results with administrators and staff as well so they can see, this is what I worked on.
Absolutely.
This is what I worked on, this is what I was able to do, or this is what I was not able to do because of X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm. And that helps you prepare for the next year, what your plan of attack is. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, do you have any parting thoughts or anything that you want to say to our school counselors?
Yeah, I just want to say that I'm so grateful for you to think of including me in this, and you know, it's just so exciting to me to think that I'm, you know, talking with people, you know, on the other side of the world doing really amazing work for our military families, and you know, just you know, it's just such an important job, and I'm just really grateful for this opportunity, and you know, I wish I could come see what everyone's doing out there.
That would be awesome.
So awesome, but just you know, I really feel that you know, school counselors are game changers, and we're you know, looking holistically at students and families, and so just keep doing the good work that you're doing.
Awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I really appreciate it, and I know that my school counselors also truly appreciate your time. Thank you, and congratulations for being the 2018 School Counselor of the Year.
Oh, well, thank you, but I really feel that all school counselors are awesome, and I'm just, you know, I just happen to be in the right place at the right time.